Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 259 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. This is Patrick. He's Justin. Justin, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been another week.
Longer than that. We just record when we want. We're just so busy.
Weekends are hard, anyways. You know.
Yeah, life comes at you fast, man. If stuff comes on your radar and you got to deal with it. That's just life.
It's the way of the road.
I don't want to wax poetical. I really want to get into it. We got a lot of Jace content to talk about. We're going to talk about the injury updates, how they've impacted the team. We'll briefly recap the mediocre performance of the team over the last six games. And then we'll preview the game against the Rockies, which, honestly, if this team can't put an ass whipping on these pitchers...
Right.
They're screwed. Now, before we talk about the injuries and stuff like that, Justin, let me paint you a picture of the situation, okay?
Okay.
The Toronto Blue Jays are 73-61, which is not a bad record by any means. The problem is it's not good enough for a playoff spot anymore. Unfortunately, Houston and Seattle and Tampa Bay are all on heaters over the last week, and they have just kind of blown by the Jays. They're so far away from them at this point, it's ludicrous. And the only team really that's sagging is Texas, but Texas were the division leaders for most of the season. And the Jays are 2.5 games back right now of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Although Houston, Seattle, and Texas are still very close to one another. The Jays are starting to fall behind. They're only 5-5 in their last 10 games, which is very bad if you want to make the playoffs. Of course, they still have a better record than the AL Central division leaders, but it doesn't matter. What matters is, do they hold one of the wild card spots today? And the answer is an emphatic no.
Ew.
How frustrated would you say you are on a scale of 1 to 10 over how August has played out for this team?
Probably like an 8.5. And then all my frustration rests with the offense. All every last bit of it. It's still baffling to me how a team with this much talent on it can be so wildly inconsistent. And I mean, you look at their last six games, they've gone from scoring 2 runs to 8 runs to 7 runs to 6 runs to 5 runs to 7 runs. They're not actually, it's not that they're not scoring runs, it's just that they're not scoring when they need to in lots of these games. And the same guys who are on offense have been making a lot more errors in the field as well, too. So really it's the same people who are kind of blowing all these games, in a sense. And it's very frustrating.
I'll say this, because while I share the sentiment that the offense is to blame for a very disappointing August, they finished the month 14-13. They still have 29 games, I think, to turn it around. Something like that. 28 games
to turn around. 28 now, I believe.
But, I mean, let's just get into it.
Yeah.
The offense the entire month has been wildly inconsistent. And while we've had games where we battered opponents, we beat up on the Red Sox, we beat up on the Cubs, we beat up on the Reds, we beat up on the Guardians, we beat up on the Nationals, It's not enough, because you dropped 2 of 3 against the Guardians, you dropped 2 of 3 against the Orioles, you dropped 2 of 3 against the Cubs, you dropped 2 of 3 against the Guardians, and you dropped 2 of 3 against the Orioles. It's not enough to be...
Yeah.
You got to be winning these series. The dip, like at the end of the year, when we look back, we're going to be pissed about the 1-0 loss against the Guardians, the 5-4 loss against the Cubs, the 1-0 loss against the Reds, the 5-4 loss against the Nationals. Those are 4 games they should have won, and they didn't. And those 4 games alone would put them in a playoff spot right now. Those four wins.
Right. Yeah.
Their record would have been 18-9 in August. Instead, it's 14-13. And they're staring at being, you know, missing the playoffs for the second time in this 4 years of a, quote, window where the team is supposed to be successful. And the only way that they are going to survive September is if the offense wakes up.
Yeah.
Facts.
That's really it. That's all. What more can you say at this point?
Let's just blow through the schedule right quick. It's not as bad as you think it is, mm-hmm. because they have a lot of games against weak opponents before shit gets real. We have nine games, not we, but the Jays have nine games left against super weak opponents, and then they have to fight Texas and then their division for the rest of the year. Let's just go through it quickly. Three against the Rockies. I said it at the top of the show. If they can't, you know, pummel these pitchers, what's the point? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Because they're bad.
It's going to be the same thing for the next six games of this road trip. It's Colorado and Oakland. I mean, you got to win these games. These teams combined barely have more wins than the Blue Jays on the season. Oakland has 39 and Colorado has 49. Like, they're both last place in their respective leagues.
Yeah, and the Royals are last place in their division.
Yeah, they're playing the three worst teams in baseball these next nine games.
So the Jays have the benefit of having a very soft schedule leading up to the big matchup against the Texas Rangers. Correct. These nine games here, I wouldn't say they're season-defining because the real pain comes in the final 2.5 weeks of the season. But we got to lay it all out there.
Yeah,
these
and the
three
problem...
games against the Rockies, three games against the Athletics, three games against the Royals. If you don't win at least... bare minimum, six of these nine games, you're done.
Yeah, and the problem remains, like, yes, these games may not be quote-unquote season-defining, but those last 2 weeks won't mean anything if you don't win almost all of these games, because those last six games, they won't be able to catch anyone in front of you, right? Like, it's...
You have to win all three series for sure.
Yep.
You have to take two out of three in all three of these series. Ideally, they sweep all three of them. That is the only way that I see the Jays being able to maintain the pace with these other hot teams. That being said, it is going to be a very intense race to the finish, and any team that collapses at this point is fucked. They're going to, the amount of climb back they have to do, they're going to run out of room. The Red Sox have already reached it, and their season hinges on that three-game series against us. The Jays in 2 weeks, and they got to win virtually every game leading up to that series just to get close
enough.
Just
have a hope. Yeah.
So by the time the Jays play the Red Sox might already be dead and buried. The Yankees are toast, and it's going to be difficult for the Jays to be able to overcome the lead the Rays have. They have, what, a 9-game lead on us? Something like that.
Eight or nine right now, yeah.
Eight or nine, and the Rays, we play them six times in our final nine games. So, it's a 9-game lead, by the way. So, there's no way to catch, like, fate is not in the hands of the team at this point. Even if they won all nine of those games, it's not going to, or all six of those games, it's not going to be enough. This is it, though. This is crunch time, and they have to win at least six of their next nine games, and we'll be back Monday, and then we will be back after the Athletics series, and those could be tough conversations, I'm not going to lie, depending on how the next three games go and then games after that. It could be real tough. We might have to have a fireside chat where we talk about the future of this season.
Yeah, and beyond. And I mean, right now the injury bug is kind of playing an issue for this team too, right? You've got Bo Bichette on the 10-day IL. Matt Chapman joined him there. They both went on the 28th of August. Bo with a hamstring issue. Chapman with his right middle finger inflammation that he had suffered from a couple weeks prior. Bo's already been seen at Rogers Center before last night's game doing some light work on the field, so that's a good sign that he maybe only needs the minimum or just a little bit more. Obviously, it's not the same issue. It's the same leg, but it's not the knee this time. It's the hamstring, but you have to think that it's probably a little bit related. Some compensation happening because of the knee injury before. And then yeah, go ahead.
I want to hit you with some ice cold water regarding Matt Chapman. Are you ready for this?
I hope I am.
In the 98 games since May the 1st, the Toronto Blue Jays are 50-48 when Matt Chapman plays.
Yep.
He is hitting .211 in those 98 games.
Yep.
With an OBP of .303, which is good, but it's also bad. With a .360 slug percentage, so an OPS of just .663, which is Alejandro Kirk's season OPS. 10 home runs, 29 RBIs, 44 walks, 122 strikeouts.
Oh my God.
I mean, I don't want to get into the fielding metrics for Chapman because it would take too long for me to break the illusion that he is still the super elite third baseman, because he's not anymore. He already has 10 errors, I think, on the season. Not that errors are the be-all and end-all for fielding. Everybody makes them. Nobody's perfect. Except maybe Tony Fernandez. But the more that
I heard that Derek Jeter guy won a bunch of gold gloves, too. He must have been pretty good.
I want to talk about that. That's a bunch of baloney. But let's talk about Matt Chapman. In the last, every month that has gone by, so May, June, July, August, Matt Chapman's value went from being, this guy's going to be a $30 million player, to this guy's going to be a $25 million player, to a $20 million player, to, I actually don't even know what he's worth at this point, because I don't know how to respond. Like, I don't know what his value is at this point, but all I know is that it won't matter whether or not the Jays make an offer to him or not, because I don't think he's coming back. And I don't know that the Jays would be better off having him come back. I think at this point, I would be comfortable with them rolling the dice on an internal candidate and just seeing what happens.
Right.
I mean, what do you think?
See, it depends. It's really going to depend, I think, on not only the remainder of the season, but also, yeah, like you said, about what Matt Chapman ends up commanding in free agency. Because he's going to be looking for big money because of his April. And, I mean, the teams are going to obviously come back and say, well, look what you did the rest of the season. You're not worth what you did in April.
Yeah.
And he's going to say, well, too bad. You know, like, it's going to be an interesting negotiation process, I think, for him and his agency team. I'm not sure who his agent is. It's probably Scott Boras, because who isn't a Boras client these days? But
I'll tell you who his agent is in just a moment.
But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting for me. Like, I like Matt Chapman. I think he's...
You're right.
It's Boras, yeah.
It's Boras Corp.
Of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? But, I mean, it's like, I like Matt Chapman, but at the same time, the price tag for me is just thinking about what he's probably going to be after. It's probably, he might be his last long-term contract, you know? His first and his last, just because of his age and the fact that he played his Arb years mostly in Oakland, or his pre-Arb years. But I'd like to see an internal candidate step up. I'd love to see Addison Barger or Arelvis or somebody else.
Or Davis Schneider. Yeah. Like, what's... Yeah, I mean, the thing is, we kind of pooped on Davis Schneider last time because he went ice cold, but it was only actually for like...
Yeah, we jumped off the bandwagon pretty early.
we did, and it was only a five-game stretch where he went 1-17.
Yeah.
Which hurts, but since the Cincinnati series when he's gotten in, he's played five or six games... And he's hit 4 home runs, and he's hitting .476 in those games. So he's kind of back to where he was. He didn't regress to the mean yet. He's still white hot. And I think you got to run that as long as possible.
You do. You just got to put him in the lineup every day until he stops hitting, because you need somebody in there who's doing something at this point in time. And
yeah, the days of Alejandro Kirk DHing are long fucking dead. If he's in the lineup, it's because he's a preferred catcher for a starter, and even then I would still force some sort of change.
Yeah.
I just think I mean, if they had not traded Moreno, Kirk would have went down by now. Like, he would have got chucked down into the minor leagues, and Moreno would have been brought up, but of course they traded him for Dalton Varsho, whose OPS hasn't quite hit 700 yet for this season. I know OPS isn't the be-all and end-all, blah, 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 but defensively he's great at the plate. He's been, to put it mildly, infuriating. But we've got to give credit where credit is due. He's been better lately.
Yeah, he has. Regarding Chapman still, I'm having a hard time saying, you know, like, let's just give this job to Schneider or give Barger an inside shot at it next year. I still think those guys are going to have to put in a lot of work in the off season and really come into spring training with the mentality of, like, I need to win this job. I don't want them to just say, like, oh yeah, like, we're not re-signing Matt Chapman because we're giving the job to Barger or we're giving the job to Schneider. I think it's got to be, you still look at what options are available via the trade market, because there isn't really anything outside of Chapman for third baseman in the free agency this winter. And I think you still have to look at the trade market. Maybe the Cardinals are looking to sell on Nolan Arenado, who's still producing a really high offensive level and defensive level this season. And I mean, if you could get a guy like that, who's a perennial all-star, silver slugger, yada, 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 platinum glove winner. I think you...
Six-time platinum glove winner.
Yeah, you look into it, right? Like, you think Matt Chapman's been good at third base in his career? Like, Nolan Arenado is in another class all by himself. And I think you need to look at that potential.
You're right. And here's why. For one thing, on a down... I mean, I guess you could say it's a down season for him. His batting average is down 20 points, but... Arenado, and he's grounded into a shit ton of double plays.
Well, and I mean, think of it this way, too. Look how bad the Cardinals are as a team this year, and he's still having what I would still say is a relatively good season, you know?
Yeah, the ribbies are down, but so is the batting average. The OPS is down. He's grounding into a lot of double plays, but he's still one of the best hitters in baseball, probably the best hitting third baseman. And with regards to his fielding, he would be a dramatic upgrade over Matt Chapman, which is crazy because Chapman was a platinum glove winner when he came to Toronto, and he just has regressed significantly. I'm not saying that they just go straight for dumping Chapman. I know it sucks, but like, I think that the Jays do have to consider a little bit of creativity when it comes to changing the lineup next season. I love the idea of trading for Arenado. I think it's going to cost a lot. You can say goodbye to at least two of
Tiedemann,
Berea, Tiedemann, Orelvis, and Barger. And
they might want somebody who's ready for the big leagues. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, and that's a heavy hit. And Nolan Arenado is an expensive contract. But he signed until 2027, and it's around that time when the window for this team is going to close anyway. So, unfortunately, I think you've got to roll the dice and make that kind of deal. Because, no offense to Chapman, but like, we can't, like, the team is not going to succeed leaning on a player whose best years were 2 or 3 seasons ago. And who's cooled off to a degree where, like, we've lost games because of their approach at the plate. And it's not just... We have to be fair, though, because, Justin, we've talked about this a million times.
Yeah.
This is not a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. problem. This is not a Matt Chapman problem. This is not on a Dalton Varsho problem. This is not an Alejandro Kirk problem. This is a Toronto Blue Jays problem.
Yeah, it's a systemic issue.
Their approach at the plate has been bad this year, and it's the little things. It's not taking a 3-0. It's swinging at an outside pitch on a 3-1 instead of rolling the dice.
Yeah.
It's topping balls or like pounding them into the dirt for a double play. I would also argue it's probably entering camp unprepared. I think we have seen that with Alejandro Kirk. He came in late. He wanted to play in the World Baseball Classic. The Jays said no.
Yeah, to be fair, his wife was going through some issues with the labor of their child, so I understand that.
Yeah, yeah, that's not. I'm not criticizing him because he was late because of that. I'm saying
it is a fact that he was late, though. Yeah, it's a fact that he was late.
It's a fact that he was late. He has looked unprepared since then. Mm-hmm. You can see it in his performance metrics. I understand, like, life happens. And
yeah, and I mean,
like,
yeah, you're right. Defensively, he's been still solid, like, still very much above average, but it has been the bat that the Jays have needed.
Behind the plate, I'm thrilled with our catchers. Correct. I think both of them have exceeded expectations defensively. My beef is that Kirk has just not looked good at the plate at all, and it has cost this team dearly. I'm fine. Danny Jansen's hitting .226, which is higher than his career average, only just. He's been giving us the power. His OPS is 776, OPS plus 112. So he's well above average.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perfectly happy with Danny Jansen doing whatever Danny Jansen does. He's been a very valuable catcher this season. It's Kirk who's just been
a letdown offensively.
Yeah, and the thing like, what's crazy is that his wins above replacement value is still higher than Danny's, despite the batting numbers being ass.
Yeah.
And his average is okay. It's .255. It's definitely a drop down from last year, but there's no power at all in his swing, and that's what's hurting. And Vladdy's power is down. Chapman's power is down since April. Varsho's power is down since he joined the team. It's gotten better. Like, some of these guys have had good months, but in general, the approach of the plate is fucked. I've never seen anything like this on the team before, where all these guys who had all-star seasons have disappeared.
It's
Santiago Espinal.
It's baffling, yeah. It's
let's
baffling.
Talk about Santiago Espinal. I mean, let's not, but
I saw a tweet, I can't remember who it was from, just before we started, saying, like, what if the Blue Jays were to DFA Espinal today and then bring up two players tomorrow instead of just one, you know, with their rosters expanding? And I was like, it's an interesting thought exercise. I don't think they're going to do it. But
no,
it's at the point where fans are actually, like, saying that, hey, this might be a good idea, you know, which is crazy to think. Like, we love Espinal. He's got a great glove for the most part. He hasn't this year, just like a lot of Blue Jays, especially on the infield. But he's just hasn't performed at all on offense. And again, what have we been talking about this entire season? The Blue Jays' lack of offense. And he has not been a help in that regard. So I don't know. That's all I got to say about him. I don't want to talk about him too much because there's not much to talk about.
It's been disappointing season for him, but we've said that about pretty much
everybody.
Player.
Yeah.
The whole year. Yep. So it's tough. I would say that if Espinal has no options, you gotta keep him because it's only 200. It's less than 200 at bats.
Yeah, he still has more option years. Like he's got two. He's got this year and next year as an option year. From what I can see online.
Why DFA him then?
Because is he worth a roster spot? Is the argument? I mean, in limited time, Ernie Clement has shown more offensive ability add then Espinal this year and Ernie Clement plays shortstop, you know? He's a utility infielder. Is Espinal worth more than Clement at this point? I don't know. I don't think he is. I think they're almost kind of they're the same use case in terms of what positions they play, but one's actually hitting for a bit more average this year in limited time and also at AAA for the most part. But it's just like, do you keep waiting for Espinal to just magically figure it out, or do you move on and try to find somebody right now who has the ability?
I mean, I'm fine with sending him down. I think it would be really embarrassing for him because he, after being up with the team for three seasons, to be sent down.
Kevin Biggio was sent down earlier this year and worked on some stuff. And look at, he's come back and has actually been a positive contributor for the most part.
Yeah. My beef with Espinal is the same. I have the same beef with Espinal as I do with Kirk. They look vastly like worse at the plate. They both look very unprepared at the plate. Mm-hmm. Very unprepared. And they make a lot of like individual pitch decisions that I don't understand. I understand, like, I'm just a fucking loser who lives in Nova Scotia. I'm not a baseball player. I understand that. But I can also look at performance metrics and interpret them, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's basically what we do.
Correct.
So I can say I'm seeing things happen pitch to pitch with both of them that don't make sense to me. But it's as we've discussed, I think it's systemic. I don't know if it's necessarily them as players. So
yeah.
I don't like the idea of DFAing anybody. I would rather hang on to them.
Yeah, I'm with you now. I think you kind of play with the cards you're dealt for the rest of this season and then really reevaluate your roster come
winter time. We have so many middle infielders in our prospect system.
Yeah.
Not that our prospect pool is overly deep. I think it's bottom five in the league.
It is.
But I don't think you can really afford to just DFA Santiago Espinal and just say, oh, well, it is what it is. Like, because the last thing you want to see is a team like Boston or fucking Seattle pick him up and then he go on a heater and then he's the guy who beats your face in mid-September, like October, if you have to play in the playoffs.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like,
send him down, keep Ernie Clement up, and then you said we get two spots.
Tomorrow the rosters expand. You can bring up one additional pitcher and one additional position player. It's 99% likely that Chad Green's the pitcher. He's ready. He's been down throwing in Buffalo for a while now. He's going to be coming up. And then it's going to really depend on whether or not the Blue Jays would like to bring up an outfielder, a primary outfielder, or another infielder as their bat. It's either going to be Nathan Lucas or Spencer Horwitz in all likelihood, just because of not only positional need, but because of performance.
Okay.
That's my guesses anyway.
It's time then. We need to have a chat.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Let's do it.
I've been ready for this conversation for over 2 months. The Toronto Blue Jays have a player on their AAA team that should have been called up like 2 months ago. And he hasn't been called up yet. And it's fucking baffling to me and it doesn't make any sense. He's hitting for average. The OBP is astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
945 OPS in the minor leagues. Explain to me why in the fuck we're not giving Spencer Horowitz cracks at plate appearances at this point, especially with the offense sagging as much as it has.
Yeah, so the counterpoint and the argument against him is that, yes, he's hitting for average, but he doesn't hit for power, which is really what the team has lacked this year. I think that's the counterpoint. And also the fact that he is a primary first baseman and a lefty, which, I mean, is just Brandon Belt. He has played some time in the outfield this year because they're looking to build up that position versatility. But it's not a ton of time. And do you want to put a guy with like 20 career minor league starts out in the outfield in a major league game in the middle of a playoff race? I don't know if that's what you want to do. So I think that's what the argument against him is. But I'm with you. I think the pros totally outweigh the cons here. And if you're not willing to bring up a guy who puts the ball in play, has a high on base percentage, doesn't strike out a ton, I mean, it's what are we doing here, right? Like you've got to be willing to try something.
That's my line, Justin. What are we doing here? Yeah. I always say that when I get flustered.
And you're right. You're right.
But at the same time, as much as I would fucking love Spencer Horowitz to come up on this team, we have to look at the bigger picture as far as what the team needs are right now. And with Bo Bichette injured, I don't think an outfielder is the answer.
I mean, you've already got Clement and Espinal who play shortstop, so you don't need another shortstop at this point. Okay, you've got Schneider and Espinal who can play, and they have Mason McCoy up now too, who is a shortstop as well. So it's like the shortstop ranks are heavy, and Barger hasn't done enough to come up this year, and I'm not ready to hand shortstop reins in a playoff race to Aurelvis Martinez,
who still has questionable
defense. I'm cutting that one off at the head before you even get here because I knew where you were going with it.
I have his fucking page up.
You've got it open. And I knew that's where you were going, so that's why I just jumped in and took it because it's just I know what you're saying, and that's one of the guys, Aurelvis, who I want to come into spring training next year and win a job. I want him to push the Blue Jays to make them let him stay with the team as they come north. That's what I want to see happen.
Okay, so the pitcher, it's Chad Green.
Yes.
It's unfortunate for Nate. Because he hasn't really thrown a lot.
No. I don't know what the deal is with that. It's kind of the same situation as like Manoah, where you just don't know what the hell's going on with some of these guys right now.
And Manoah now reported to, he
went last week on like Tuesday or something was when he finally reported to Triple. He met them in Syracuse. They're playing the Mets there.
I missed that. That was sneaky.
Yeah. So it took him a while, but he got there.
Okay. So let's circle back then. You say it's going to be,
I still think it's Horowitz or Lukacs, and I could see it being either. I mean, I don't have a preference either way. I'd love to see Horowitz get a shot. We kind of know what we're going to get from Lukacs. He tends to have decent at-bats, but I'd love to see Horowitz come up again. I mean, he had a brief call-up time for like 3 days or whatever it was back in May, I think, something like that. But it wasn't long enough to get like a look at him, obviously, but I'd love to see him get that shot for a week. Maybe you DH him, maybe you throw him in left field for a day against Oakland or Kansas City, where it's a team that's not super good, and you kind of let it happen. I don't know. It's a tough one for me to say like either way. Oh yeah, this guy's coming up. I'm not sure where the team's leaning right now.
I would, if it were me, if I were in charge of this, I would not bring up Nathan Lukacs. I don't think he adds anything to the team that's not already there. And I know I'm basing it on 25 at-bats that he had this season, but I wasn't really overly impressed.
Sure.
I would rather give the chance to 23-year-old Addison Barger and just see what happens.
Fair enough.
Fuck it. I know it's not going to be Tyler Heineman.
It's not. No more catchers. They need to bring up somebody who can actually do something.
Look at the roster. There's really just nobody else.
Yeah, the pitching is cut and dry with Chad Green, but the position player, it really depends on what the Jays want to add to their roster. Do they want to add like some more outfield versatility, or do they want to add a high on base, high ball in play, potentially high batting average guy in Horowitz? Neither guy is going to come up and do what Schneider's doing and hit like a insane amount of home runs, but you can't expect that of anybody either. Schneider's having just a crazy month here.
Question for you: is Rafael Lantigua on our Is he in our system or is he just a minor leaguer?
He's a minor leaguer. He's not on the 40-man roster.
He would have to be on the 40-man for us to call him up too.
That's correct.
Which is not. So the Jays haven't signed him to a deal at all. Because he's a left fielder and he's having a terrific season in Buffalo.
How do you spell his last name? Is it
L-A-N-T-I-G-U-A?
Yeah, like he'd be on a minor league contract with the Blue Jays, but he's not on the 40-man roster.
Is he even on our prospect list?
Probably not. Nope. He's 25 years old. He's Rule 5 eligible, has been for a couple seasons now. Nobody's taken him, so.
He's having a terrific season in Buffalo, and
yeah,
lots I of would a- almost rather call giving him an opportunity than I would.
And to do that, Nathan they Lucas. Could move Hagen Downer to the 60-day IL and open up a 40-man roster spot. Just saying.
That is appealing.
I don't think it's going to happen. But
again, this is the exact same problem you just had with having an inexperienced outfielder in the middle of the playoff race. Was
exactly.
The same argument against Spencer Horowitz is you don't want an inexperienced guy in the outfield.
Yeah, exactly.
Deal with Lantigua. The difference is that he does have a significant amount of minor league experience, but that doesn't necessarily
matter.
You're hoping that he comes in and is Davis Schneider at the plate. You know what you're getting with Nathan Lucas, which is going to be a guy who's like 650 OPS, maybe replacement level, maybe.
Yeah.
Lantigua is a total unknown, but he's also having a terrific year. So, I think, honestly, if we have any major injuries to outfielders for the rest of the year, where they have to go on IL to end the year, fuck it. I would bring up Lantigua. I would. I would do it. Even without the experience, because if we lose KK or if we lose Springer, we're probably toast anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, at this point.
And even then, Springer hasn't really had that great a year, but I don't know if we're ready to talk about that.
There's a lot we're not ready to talk about here.
It's too soon. We're really gaming the system here by coming up with reasons to call up guys who don't even have a pro contract, but let's just talk very briefly about the results. Obviously, we lose 2-1 against Cleveland, but we take 2 against Washington. Losing to Cleveland sucked, but I think I was more bothered by the 1 loss against Washington than I was the 2 losses against Cleveland. Because, again, that was a game we should have won, and they failed. Again, the clutch hitting. It came down to the bases loaded and Danny Jansen.
With nobody out, Patrick. It's a classic noble tiger. You hate to see it. Jesus
Christ. I'm so tired of this team's performance, runners in scoring position. They got to be worse than 26th at this point. It's got to be worse than that now. It's just miserable. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Cleveland are that bad a team, so losing 2 out of 3 against them doesn't hurt as much as losing the 1 game against Washington when we really need to pound these weaker teams into the ground. I don't know, man.
Yeah, what more can you say about it at this point that we haven't already said a billion times?
I mean, is there anyone's performance out of any of those games you want to talk about, or should we just
no, not really
skip to the part where we cry in the shower over?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best
thing. I think we're there point. But what I was really happy though, the 7-0 ass whooping from yesterday, that's a good statement game. I think that really kind of helps to pull the team together. Kirk was 3 for 3 with 3 runs batted in. You love to see that, especially after a miserable season. Espinal was 2 for 4 with 2 RBIs. These are guys we just criticized 2 seconds ago. Biggio had an RBI, 1 for 3. Davis Schneider, the Schneid, was 1 for 2 with 2 walks. I mean, that's pretty good. Springer, 0-for-4. Merrifield 1-for-4. Guerrero 1-for-4. It wasn't the Varsho 1-for-4. It wasn't the big boys who got it done yesterday. It was the power of these replacement level players. Ernie Clement with a single.
He's a hitter. He puts the bat on the ball, which I appreciate. I mean, it's pretty hard to get a hit when you can't put the ball in play, and we've seen that just countless times in all these different runners in scoring position situations where the ball just doesn't get put out in play. They just smoke it right into the fucking ground, or they strike out, they pop it up in foul territory because they're swinging at a pitch. I can't remember what game it was or what the situation was, but there was a point in the series against Washington, or maybe it was actually against Cleveland, where Espinal had a 3-0 count and he swung at the 3-0 pitch.
That's what I'm talking about. That was what I was saying earlier. Yeah. I was like, it's so fucking infuriating when these guys, they have the advantage. Don't swing. Just take the pitch.
I wouldn't mind it if you're up 7-0, but when you're losing like the Jays were at the time, it's inexcusable to swing at that pitch in that situation. You have to think of yourself, like, instead of thinking about, oh, I'm going to be a hero and hit a home run on this 3-0 fastball that I'm going to get, and then it's on the inside corner of the plate, and all the best you can do is foul it off. You've got to start thinking more about, like, I need to take this pitch and get on base if it's a walk. And if it's a strike, whatever, I've got two more chances, you know? Like, what are we doing swinging at that pitch? What's the end game?
It's a great question. Santiago Espinal has 11 career home runs in 328 games. I don't know why he would swing like that at a 3-0 pitch.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. And let's just move on from that. And let's talk about Chris Bassett. Holy shit.
Yeah, that was a gem yesterday.
110 pitches. 71 of them were strikes. He wasn't out there overwhelming guys. He was out there just throwing shit that nobody could understand.
Yeah, he was it's kind of almost like a classic, like I'd say like a Mark Burley game, you know, just baffling people with pitches, like just weak, a lot of weak contact. Just a lot of confused swings, which I greatly appreciate.
He brought his ERA down 19 points. He went from 4.00 to 3.81. So that's the whole rotation right now, all with an ERA under 4. Right. I know I'm kind of cheating a little bit using Ryu instead of Kirk, or not Kirk, Manoah. Two juicy boys. But yeah, that's, I mean, right now, like, there's not much more you could ask out of the pitching staff. And Jay Jackson, of course, coming in and throwing 21 pitches, 13 of them for strikes. He did give up two hits, but it didn't matter. The game was already over. Right. And, the Nationals had three hits and one walk heading into the ninth. They couldn't get anything going the whole day. And Jay Jackson came out there and did exactly what we needed him to do. I'm glad to have him back up. I understand why he was sent down. But there's no zero chance that he gets sent back down the rest of the year.
I would say so, unless he starts struggling.
Unless he really starts struggling, giving up like multiple grand slams, he's locked in, as far as I can see,
to a
great performance. So all of our qualms really are with the hitting.
Yeah, and
we've for the pitching.
We've beat that horse to death over and over again, even today.
All right, let's move on then from the series that have been. Let's talk about the series that is tomorrow. Hwangjin Ryu will take the mound against Chris Flexen, who's having a forgettable season. He's having the type of season where your manager is going to say, we don't have anybody else as far as performance. That being said, his recent performance has been better. I'm being really generous. His last 11 innings pitched, so the game against the White Sox on the 20th and the game against the Orioles on the 26th, he did only give up just 3 earned runs in 11 innings between the two games. I mean, that's good. He's still conceding a lot of hits, not a lot of walks, And he is getting strikeouts. He's just had a miserable season. It's just been pure misery for him. April was not great. The only really good appearance he had in April was against the Toronto Blue Jays when he was with the Mariners. His fastball is just, I don't know what happened. Because Chris Flexen last year was fine. Serviceable pitcher. And the year before that, he was fine. But this year, his fastball is one of the worst that I have seen as far as metrics go. Opponents are slugging 741 against it, and it's his most often thrown pitch 40% of the time. That's 500 pitches. So what are you thinking? They're going to sit on Heater tomorrow or what?
God, they better. If they don't, if they go up there hacking at sliders that he throws two times a game, I'm going to be so mad.
It's going to be a healthy dose of fastballs and cutters. So you're looking at stuff with velocity, like you and I had discussed before the show in our pregame ceremony. I think the boys just got to hit a sit on Heater. Sit on it and take your lumps otherwise, because his changeup hasn't really been consistent this year. It's not terrible, but I don't know. It's probably his best pitch this year, but even then, he doesn't throw it as often.
No.
You really got to wail on him, though. I like the idea of getting 6-7 runs off of him before he gets the boot, because it would be really disastrous if he was gone after, like, 4 runs, because you really want to run up the score on him. Get into the Rocky bullpen early and often, right off the hop, and I guess it doesn't really have to go without saying, but we do need a quality start from Ryu tomorrow, or at Correct. Least 5 innings. The bullpen is very, very fresh, as you pointed out.
Yep.
And Ryu has been good.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take what we're getting from Ryu at this point. This is all just bonus material at this point. The fact that he even came back, we've mentioned it before. I mean, it's 14 months to the day of his surgery, he was back on a big league mound. So, and he just actually, if you look at Fangraphs, he actually has an even 10 years of Major League Baseball service time now. So congrats to him on that.
Pension locked in, baby.
Pension's locked in, yep.
You'd love to see it. I think he'll be fine, though. There's not really a lot there on the Rockies that scares me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is in Colorado, though, so
that's correct. It's mile high air, buddy. And the thing about Coors, curveballs tend to not do well there, and Ryu throws quite a few curveballs. He's not had a great career record at Coors Field, so the Blue Jays may need to somehow hit some home runs here and do something offensively in this game.
Yeah, they're going to have to run up the score. The Saturday game is Yusei Kikuchi facing Ty Block. Do you want to preview these guys for me?
I mean, we know what we're getting from Kikuchi. High velo. A lot of strikeouts.
Terrific season.
He's having one of the best bounce back seasons, him and Berríos both this year, that we've seen from a Blue Jays starting pitcher in a long time. He still gets hit quite hard when he gets hit, but he's cut the walks, Patrick, incredibly. Last year, he was third percentile in walk percentage. He's now 75th percentile in walk percentage, which
is put in the work.
Excellent. He's not striking out quite as many per nine as he did last year, but
he has control.
He's got control now. He's not giving up free passes, which is huge. The fastball velo is still there. He's still averaging 95 on that pitch. He's throwing his fastball, the four-seam fastball, 46% of the time. He does not throw the cutter at all anymore. He's got the slider, he's got the curveball, and he's got the split change. All 4 of his heat maps are just like chef's kiss this year. I don't know what to say that we haven't already said about this guy, but he's just been tremendous. And I love it.
His slider's been his best pitch, and his recent starts have not quite gone as well as
yeah, there's been some shakiness, but I think this off day will help as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. The start against Baltimore was not great. The start against Cleveland, he did give us six innings, but again, four runs. It didn't really set the rest of the team up for success. The problem, though, again, we can't really... I wouldn't criticize Kikuchi for that line. Six innings, six hits, four earned runs, two walks, eight strikeouts. He's not the reason we lost that game.
Yeah.
It didn't help, but he's not the reason we lost. It was the very opposite of clutch hitting. Meanwhile, do you know anything about Ty Block? What do you got for me?
So I can tell you that, you know how there's percentile rankings on Savant from from 1 to 100?
Yes.
He is the 1% on four things. Expected batting average, K percentage, he does not strike anybody out. Whiff percentage, nobody misses when they swing. And he's actually the first percentile in terms of extension, so how far he stretches towards the plate. He is 86th percentile in walk rate and 68th in chase. So while he does get guys to chase his pitches, they hit them. And they hit them quite hard. His hard hit percentage is not good. His expected batting average against is .315, Patrick.
That's not...
Yeah, his pitch mix is as follows. It's a sinking fastball, a two-seamer, a changeup, a cutter, and a curveball. The four-seamer is about 57%. The change is 23%. The cutter is 15%, and the curve is 5%. Hasn't really changed much over the full year. I'm looking at the month by month. For 2023 here, I'm just pulling that up, and
it hasn't changed
much. He's been throwing the sinker the majority of the entire year. Guys just don't swing and miss. His sinker does actually have a positive run value, and on that one the expected batting average is only .294. They're actually hitting .246 against it. It's everything that he throws off speed. The cutter, .333 batting average. The curveball, .375 batting average. Those pitches are getting absolutely walloped. The changeup, while batters are only hitting .238 against it, the expected batting average is .337, meaning that batters have gotten unlucky on balls in play against the changeup. Not a ton of innings pitched for this guy, only 48 innings pitched this season, 418 for his career, so he's not a rookie by any means. This is actually his sixth Major League Baseball season. Came up with the Giants. Actually pitched for Baltimore back in 2019 for five games, and I do not remember him at all. He had a .218 whip for them that year, which is probably why good. I don't remember him. He didn't last very long.
But number of home runs he's given up this year, though, it's not like it varies a lot between different stadiums. It generally hovers around 5, 6, 7.
Correct.
No matter what team he's playing against or would be playing, like four.
Yeah,
or whatever,
four of his last five starts, though, he has allowed us a home run in those games, and his the walk rate has come up quite a bit recently. He hasn't had a start with no walks since the end of July. This month, he's had two starts with two walks and another start where he's walked three batters. His high for strikeouts actually came in his last start against Baltimore when he struck out seven.
That was a great start, actually.
Yeah, he went seven innings of one-run baseball. It was only a solo home run that he gave up. So interesting there. He's actually his last two starts have come against the American League East, against Baltimore and against Tampa, and was serviceable in both, I would say. More so against Baltimore, of course. But those were both games on the road. They were in Tampa and in Baltimore, and we know how pitcher-friendly Camden Yards has become, especially against right-handed batters with that deep fence. So very interesting.
I'm not worried about Ty Block very much. They're probably going to get the best out of the three starters from him, or at least if we were to look at everything on paper, he looks to be the best of the three we have to face.
Yeah, I would say so.
But Kikuchi, I think, represents the best of the Jays, at least in the last month and a half as well. So it's I wouldn't say it's an intriguing matchup, but it's probably the least uninteresting matchup. Game three is going to go on Sunday afternoon. Kevin Gausman will be squaring up against Austin Gomber.
That one's still not fully confirmed yet. MLB.com doesn't have Gomber. A couple other sites do.
Yeah,
MLB has TBD. Gomber is another lefty, Patrick.
He is. He's not having
blueberries.
his record is 9-9, which you would think, oh yeah, that's not bad. His ERA is 5.50, and his fastball is actually a worse run differential than Chris Flexen's, and Chris Flexen is having the worst year of his career, I would argue.
Yeah.
Gomber's fastball is getting lit the fuck up this year. Opponents are hitting 346 against it, and he's thrown it 948 times.
Yeah.
That's how his season is going. If it ends up being Gomber that they face, sit on the heater and just fucking let her rip.
Yeah,
I feel like David Schneider's going to hit 27 home runs this.
Another guy with some home run issues. He's given up 4 home runs over his last 3 starts. Has also walked 7 batters over those 3 starts and has a 4.68 ERA for the month of August. So he's looking to turn the calendar to September as fast as possible. But none of these guys are what you would say good starting pitchers.
Well, the problem is that they're on a team that's just struggled all year long. Some of their metrics are okay, but like you really can't give them a pass for this level. Like it's pretty egregious in some spaces.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but it's also
hey, the Blue Jays this year have had a habit of making not so great pitchers look like Cy Young Award winners, so we'll see what happens here. I'm cautiously optimistic. It is Coors Field. You never know what's going to happen. You could give up 3 home runs and be down early. It's just what it is there. But I'll be curious to see how Ryu does tomorrow, especially given his mixed history at Coors Field as a visiting pitcher, but mostly with the Dodgers, of course. So I'll be very curious to see how that goes. That's all I got. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think we've said what we need to say. Really, this entire weekend hinges on the offense having a big weekend. We need it. We need to see it, rather. It's hard for me not to say we and us when I'm talking about the team. I'm not a member of the team in any capacity, but I see myself as a part of the collective.
I'm trying to avoid being a part of the collective this year, you know?
No, I get it. But this is as juicy an opportunity as we've been afforded in many weeks to beat the crap out of a team and come out of it feeling good. So they take advantage of it and win the series or sweep or anything less than that. And I think we're talking about 2024.
Yes.
I think that's it. I think you start to pile the dirt on them.
Running out of time.
That's a rather dark note to conclude on. Let's try to conclude with something positive. It's an exciting opportunity to see what player will be called up tomorrow and whether or not they'll be immediately inserted into the lineup. We all have our preferences as far as who it is that comes up. You know what? Here's my bold take. You ready?
Yes.
They're going to call up Spencer Horowitz.
Okay.
And they're going to get him into games.
Can I make a correction? It's not Horowitz, just Horowitz.
I apologize. It wasn't my intention.
Just a pet peeve.
I see that now. It's hard because I grew up. I'm a Beastie Boys fan, and I mean, Horowitz.
I know Horowitz is as well. So I had to be corrected on that myself. So I'm just paying it forward in a sense.
Okay, no, my bold prediction, my hot take is it's going to be Spencer Horowitz that gets called up number 13 in Buffalo. He's 25 years old. I think that he is going to be on this team next year anyway.
Okay.
And this is his audition coming up. That's my Super Bowl prediction.
Okay. Okay.
Do you got anything else? Any bold predictions for the weekend?
No, I just want the Blue Jays to win baseball games and for me to get lots of sleep this long weekend. That's all I want.
One other thing I'll say, too. We didn't really talk about it, but the three teams that we're chasing, Texas, Houston, Seattle, who are they playing this weekend? Because that kind of matters.
Let me pull that up really quickly here.
I can tell you who Texas is playing. Because
they're playing
Twins
again.
That's right, yeah. So they're, yeah.
The Rays are playing the Guardians.
Okay.
And the Astros are playing the New York Yankees. So we need a little help from our friends in New York.
Honestly, this might be annoying to say, but I would rather the Yankees lose because it's much funnier to me.
Yeah, I have a hard time saying I hope the Yankees win.
No, I will never say it. So
yeah, that's a tough one.
So looking at it, the Rays and Guardian, I don't have a lot of hope there. The Twins versus the Rangers is intriguing. Hopefully the pitching matchups are a little bit more favorable in games 2 and 3 than they are in game 1, where Max Scherzer takes the mound. And then the Yankees, who are just hopeless.
Yeah,
we'll be playing the Astros, and by the time the Jays play, most of those games will either be over or will be very late. So it's kind of fun. It's going to be a fun weekend because some of those games will be over before the Jays game starts.
True.
And it could be a very quick turnaround, too. Any of those teams lose all three games this weekend and the Jays can win a series or sweep, we could be whistling a different tune when we record again on Labor Day. And that's my positive note. Let's conclude there. That's a good time to walk away.
I like that. All right. Well, if you like what we do, of course, give us a follow at BFMD Podcast on Twitter. Find all the episodes wherever you get your podcasts, the website, bfmdpodcast.com. We will be back on Labor Day, as Patrick mentioned, to recap this Rockies series. Hopefully it's not a Rocky series. Okay.
Oh boy.
And then preview the Oakland Athletics series as well, as the Blue Jays make a trip to the Bay Area. For Patrick Marsh out in Halifax, I am Justin Anderson here in Saskatoon, and we will see you next time.